listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Out of Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it, 200 stations coast to coast. I am not RJ Bell, I am Brad Powers. Filling in for Jonas Knox today. RJ is here, but a little bit under the weather. Speaking of under the weather, plague is hitting here in Las Vegas. Steve Fezzik is available, but on the phone, he also is sick. So if you've been waiting for a Straight Out of Vegas show, we'll just call it the laryngitis show. I think it'll be well known in the next 6 months, RJ.
Here's what I'm hoping, Brad. It's going to be like the Jordan flu game. They're going to say, how in the heck did they do that show with his voice like that? Or they could say, man, you better get better fast. That was horrible. We don't know.
We don't. But what we do know, RJ, is, wow, some controversy in game one yesterday in the NBA playoffs. And we'll start it off in the Western Conference. Steve Fezzik is on the line. The Warriors take a 1-0 lead in this series. The Warriors are 6.5-point favorites, win 104-100. The big talk radio story today, though, is about the non-fouled calls on James Harden. Fez, just a simple question. How did you react to that game one performance by the Warriors, and any upgrade or downgrade on the two teams?
Well, first off, I have to tell you, James Harden complaining about refereeing is curious, because no player takes more advantage of the refs, in my opinion, than Harden in terms of traveling, in terms of getting fouls called on the opponents. But I actually downgraded, to answer the question, downgraded Golden State. They only won by 4 points despite getting the calls, and a complete disappearance of the big men for the Houston Rockets, who got nothing out of P.J. Tucker or out of Clint Capella.
Well, hold on a second, Fez. Golden State, I think, was in a very bad schedule spot, right? So, rest-wise, compared to the Rockets. So, the fact they win the game, boy, and I mean, they turn the ball over. I mean, it seems like there's parts of that stat line for Golden State that if you would have knew before the game, you would have said, Houston wins this game, right or wrong?
Correct, and no doubt about it that it was there for the taking for the Rockets, RJ. The fact that Golden State had to go six games against the Clippers and the Rockets headed to the Bay, they got there way before Golden State did, in fact, and they were ready to go. And the fact that clearly, in my eyes, Curry was not at 100% and had to defer to Durant. Houston had every opportunity to get the win, and they could not get it done.
So let me hear, if I'm hearing you straight, you yet still downgraded Golden State, even though they're playing with a less than 100% Steph Curry, less than 100% Klay Thompson. After winning that game, you still downgraded the Warriors.
Yes, because I'm concerned that Curry's not going to be 100% game two with his ankle going forward. I think Klay looked very much close to 100% and played very good defense, but Curry not.
Well, hold on, Fez. That's a different story. If you're saying the performance of the Rockets or the Warriors against the Rockets was sufficient to keep their, not downgrade them, even though they didn't cover the number, but you've reevaluated Curry and his health and thus a downgrade. That makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, and that was the downgrade. And we all saw it, RJ, in the fourth quarter. Curry normally is very much involved, and he was content to just let Durant do his thing. Curry did not look like he was close to 100%.
Yeah, I guess there's two sides to every coin, Fez, but yet Steph Curry, when he needed to make the big shot, hit the three with under a minute left. Here's what I saw. You know, take the free throw shooting out of it. You know what cost Houston the game? Not the referees, not anything Golden State did. Let's talk about the three-point shot, which Houston relies on in this new age of the NBA. Houston shot 14 out of 47 from three-point range. That is their worst worst performance in the last 20 games. To me, that's what ended up costing Houston the game, not the free throw disparity, which in fact Houston had and shot more free throw attempts than the Warriors.
Yeah, there really wasn't a free throw disparity, and you nailed it, Brad. The first quarter cost Houston the game, I would make the case. They could not make a three in the first quarter, blinking that they were down 9 points, and then basically they just ran out of time the rest of the game, where I did feel that they were playing better than Golden State the rest of the game.
Well, it's so fascinating, because on one hand, we could say Houston, if they shoot a normal percentage on threes, they win the game.
Yep.
We can also say Golden State had a scheduling advantage, and Curry, their second most valuable player, wasn't 100%, and they won.
Yep.
So I think you could look at both sides as something to feel good about, though Houston is down 0-1.
And here's what the market's telling us. No really adjustment. Game one's line on Game Day was right around 5.5, 6 points. Game two coming up here in the upcoming night, right around Golden State at home, favored by 5.5, 6 points.
Now, if anything, though, that is an up arrow for Golden State. I mean, Fez, correct me if I'm wrong, the zigzag, and explain the zigzag.
Yeah, so zigzag basically calls for whoever loses game one, straight up we're talking about, is in a good spot game two. So typically, all things being equal, you would expect that it would be slightly more likely to get the good performance out of the team that lost game one.
And because of that, that's Houston, you would expect the line to do what in game two?
We would expect the line to drop. And in fact, it did drop, RJ. Game one closed Golden State -6 across the board. So Golden State was a 6-point favorite. Now game two, there's been an adjustment, slight adjustment for the zigzag. Game two is only at 5.5 Golden State favorite.
Okay, so a little slightly different closer. But still, it seems like not a half a point, a little less than you'll sometimes see. Couple of things with me. Let's talk about the officiating. Fezzik says, oh, Harden gets a bunch of calls, so he shouldn't complain. Well, if that's the baseline, if the assumption is, based on the whole season, 82 games, if the assumption is, we're going to call this, we're not going to call this, why would it change? Colin was talking today. Oh, Harden, you've been hustling all these bad referees. Now you finally have the good referees, because it's the playoffs, and they're not going to put up with this stuff. They're not going to get manipulated. They're not going to get fooled. Well, why? So that's telling me during the season that somehow those refs are getting fooled? And that's the majority of the games? Meaning, Fez, you watch a lot of games. What percentage of Houston's games this season did Harden get those calls? What percentage didn't they get them? And using game one as an example of not getting the calls. How many games this season, percentage-wise, were like game one?
I would say maybe 20% during the regular season, that you would have the situation where Harden would not get the balance of the calls his way. And let's face it, Harden is the master at this, RJ. When Harden takes a three-point shot, when he does a step-back three, sometimes he just fades away. Sometimes he kicks his legs forward, Reggie Miller style. So it's very difficult for the defender, because he never knows whether Harden's feet are coming forward or not. Now, what clearly happened in this game is that the referee crew was on alert that Harden kicks his legs forward unnaturally, and they weren't going to give him that
call. Hold on a second. On alert? Or were they somehow asleep for 40 last whole season?
It sure seems like it. Seems to me I've seen Harden kick defenders and get calls all year long when he would just bring his feet forward, and he was not getting that call. So this game, so much so.
Well, you're making my point. If 80% of the season Harden gets those calls, if he doesn't get them in game one of the second round of the playoffs, then what? I don't understand something so fundamental, something that so affects the game, varying like this, and that being a good thing. I don't really care If he gets the calls, I don't really care if he doesn't. But I want consistency. And I get there's going to be a certain range of subjectivity, you know, like a strike zone. But this seems big. And Fezzik, even subconsciously, you're trying to explain it by saying they were on alert. Well, how couldn't they know? There's no alert. They're just calling things differently. Is that because of the refs, who they are naturally, and they would have been calling things differently in January, these same refs? Or is it now we have different rules during the playoffs? The fact that that answer isn't clear is the problem.
And we've had this discussion in other sports when we talked about, you know, when or not to call pass interference late in games, games that mean more important. That came into play in the NFC Championship game. This just doesn't seem like an NBA issue. It's across all sports. There's this, at least there's this thought process out here, but come playoff time, the refs want to swallow their whistles. And I agree with you, RJ, that shouldn't be the case. Whatever should be good in the regular
season. But hold on. If that's the case, Brad, Why did Houston get these calls in the last round of the playoffs?
They did.
So it's not about the playoffs, right? Or does now we get so much subtlety? Well, you're going to get those calls in the first round, but not the second round. But would they have gotten them in the second against Denver? But now it's against Golden State in the third round in some hypothetical season, and they're not going to get him there. Where's the freaking line?
See, I think too many people are focusing on just those three or four instances.
That would have changed the game.
It would have, but James Harden still went to the line 16 times, yeah, RJ. That's remember, double his average.
But remember, if a 400-pound guy walks in and he normally has 8 hamburgers for lunch, and he's got, you know, oh, guys, my stomach's upset, and he has 3, and if the average guy only has 2, you could say, Big Jim's fine, he had 3 hamburgers. Well, what does he usually have? Right? So you're saying, oh, Houston had more foul shots than an average team. But how was their foul shots relative to their expectations?
I can tell you that James Harden got double the free throw attempts that he has averaged in his career in the playoffs. Double.
In the playoffs overall?
Overall, yep.
But we're talking about game one. You're making the point that he's been being officiated, that Harden's been being officiated the same way in the playoffs than the regular season. Well, then why the difference now? That isn't that the question?
Yep.
Now, Fez, well, why don't we do this when we come back? When we come back, we're going to ask Fez how much officiating, or at least his projections of what we're going to see in game two, affects his pick in game two. Also, Coach Kerr did something early in this series he's never done before. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Straight out of Vegas, this is Brad Bowers filling in for Jonas Knox. RJ Bell in the house here. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, it's the talk of the Twitterverse. Game of Thrones updated odds after the big Battle of Winterfell. We'll have that for you at the bottom of the hour. But great tease by RJ. Steve Kerr and the Warriors did something he hasn't done in prior series before. What was it, RJ?
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in a minute. This is the laryngitis show, we're going to call it, for history's sake. I'm thinking I sound a little like Brando in The Godfather.
You do.
Let's see. Let's try. Hold on.
And I refuse to be a fool.
And I refuse to be a fool. Is that
very one? Close.
Let's try one more.
I don't apologize to take care of my family.
I think I don't apologize to take care of my family.
Very good.
So now I'm tough, right? I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. Well, listen, guys, we do it every day. We bring the fun of Vegas every weekday to you. Right now, 61 degrees. There's a monsoon, I mean, literally out the window. And the neon is still pulsing, still pulsing. Golden State, we've all heard of the lineup of death. And it's the small ball lineup. Draymond goes to the 5. I've always thought to myself, or at least my initial instinct, well, if that's so good, play it all the time. But here's the catch-22. if you got Draymond, who's undersized, in fact, if almost everyone's undersized, if you all move down, not that it's exactly like that, but if the four is playing a five and the three is playing a four, everyone's banging on the bigger guy. Well, for the short term, it's fine, right? But over a season, imagine if they're playing the lineup of death, the Hamptons five, for, you know, most of the game in November, in December, how are you going to be in June? So if you look at the history of Kerr in the Durant era and how early in a series he relies on the lineup of death, it's usually a little bit earliness, maybe game one and two, nothing, or a few minutes. If you look at game one of this series, and I'm going to give you the number. In fact, why don't you read these numbers, Brad? And it's going to be that lineup of death. The first number is going to be game one against Houston. The second number is the number of minutes this player played average during the regular season.
And we'll start it with Kevin Durant. 43 minutes in game one, regular season. Durant averages 35. Klay Thompson, 41 in game one, regular season, 34. Draymond Green, 40, 31 during the regular season. Steph Curry played 37 yesterday, 34 on average for Steph. And Iguodala, 34 in game one, averages only 23 in the regular season, RJ.
So, I mean, upwards.
6, 7, 8 minutes per player.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Iguodala, it's over 10.
Yep.
So, to me, Fez, here's the question. What ramification? You might say, well, it's the playoffs. So, well, historically, Kerr hasn't done this in game one of a series. What does it tell you? On one hand, my first response might be, well, this is the conference final. He's going to do all Kerr can to win, even if it means the team won't be quite as good the next round. But hey, the opponent won't be as good as Houston. So it looks like Kerr's front-loading this approach. Fez. It looks like Fez. We don't have Fez for some reason. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to the idea of this might bode well for Houston, if I'm competing against somebody and they start doing something they don't typically do, I'm thinking they're scared of me.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, when does Houston reap the benefits of Golden State doing something early they don't typically do? And I've got a theory. I think when Golden State has extended rest in between games, there won't be any ramifications from this, because we know the playoffs are stretched out for TV, and the amount of rest the team gets is so much more than usual. Often not having a deep bench, playing your starters more, there's no real consequence. But in the games where there is a limited break, one day off, I think it's a big advantage for Houston. What do you think of that, Brad, first?
Yeah, I think you're spot on, RJ. And game two is going to be in that situation that should, in your philosophy here, favor Houston, only one day off. Very unique, a little bit scheduling from game two to game three, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, rest for Golden State. I think the way we approach this, according to you, RJ, and I agree with it, is probably more likely to back Houston in game two, more likely to back Golden State in game three.
I agree, and I also think Kerr is going to look at it with 3 days off between game two and three, as who knows if those starters don't play even more minutes, figuring we're going to have enough time to recover. Fez, what do you think?
Yeah, I think major advantage for the guards for Houston. I mean, you got to look at Curry. You got to look at Thompson, both with bum ankles going into game one. And, yeah, they're going to recover from their sprained ankles. But having to play 40 minutes instead of 33, that's going to make a big deal. Iguodala is not used to playing this many minutes. He's not young. And you look at a guy like Gordon, third guard for the Rockets, he's young. I think that major advantage for Houston game two.
I agree. And maybe part of the reason I line in the updated number, Brad, Houston, Golden State, game two.
Golden State favored by 5.5 at home, RJ.
I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. This is the Laryngitis Show.
But I'm a superstitious man.
Next up, Boston, Milwaukee. You know, we're just going to let Fez answer.
I wanted to lead with this game.
Well, yeah. That's great.
If Fez was here, we would have done it.
You have a bet, Brad, with me and Fez laid out.
Yeah, so here's the bet. About almost 6 weeks ago now, we took, at that point, there was four teams that all had similar odds to win the Eastern Conference. It was Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, and Philly. And we had a little draft between the three of us. And Fez went first. He took Milwaukee, laid the extra lumber to pick first and take the Bucks. RJ, I laid the heaviest. I went second, laid a big number, and took the Celtics. You sat back and said, hey, I'll let the two boys do what they got to do. And you actually got the team you wanted.
Fez is like 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
He does act like a child sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, you got to straighten him out. So that's where I get confused. You sat back. RJ didn't have to pay any extra, and you got the team you wanted to begin with. Toronto. Toronto looked good, game one. Boston looked good, game one. Fez is Milwaukee Bucks. Not so much, Fez.
I mean, if you look at, and we're going to let Fez answer for it, but if you look at the margin of victory throughout the regular season, Milwaukee had a historically good margin.
Yep.
You look at how well they played in the first round, looked as good as any team ever. Fez, game one, an aberration? Game one, more about Boston? Or is there another answer?
I think it's more about coaching, RJ. And get this stat. If you had told me that the Bucks were going to shoot 24 free throws and Boston was only going to shoot 8, talk about preferential refereeing if any game applied. Milwaukee gets all these free throws and they still lose by 22. A masterful coaching job by Stevens, who basically said, Giannis, you're not going to beat us inside. They held Giannis in check, and Giannis, for whatever reason, was not able to distribute to his teammates in game one.
This is where Straight Out of Vegas is different. Fezzik didn't answer the question. Almost any other talk show would kind of act like he did and ask the next question. We're not doing that. There's money on the line. Cold cash over hot takes. Fez, do you need me to repeat the question?
No, we're going to downgrade Milwaukee more, RJ. We're going to upgrade Boston a little bit.
Wait, hold on a second. You're going to downgrade Milwaukee after they get crushed? I mean, what are you telling me?
Yes, because they got crushed, not because of just random poor shooting, but because they got completely, in my opinion, outcoached. And I think that they are exposed for a team with limited playoff experience. When you took away their superstar, the rest of the team did not respond.
So in what way was the Milwaukee team outcoached? What did you see Stevens do?
I saw Stevens let Giannis shoot from the outside, which he chose not to do, and let Giannis drive into the lane, and he got double-teamed, and he was unable to distribute the ball to his teammates, who seemed unwilling to want to take shots. We saw Lopez, Bledsoe, Brown all shot the ball 7 or fewer times. None of them made more than one shot. They're all starters, RJ.
Yeah, and Horford was the main guy guarding Giannis. Here's my concern moving forward. You look at plus-minus. Giannis had the worst of any player in that game yesterday, minus 24. And if you remember, Boston was up double digits early, and Milwaukee made a 15-0 run to close it to 2 at halftime. That 15-0 run came when Giannis was sitting on the bench the entire time. To me, that's a big worry moving forward.
But this can't be the first time the team said, we'd rather Giannis shoot outside, and we don't think his supporting cast is up to snuff. That has to be a common approach, right, Fez?
Yes, but the team appeared to look extremely tight for playoff basketball. Playoff basketball against a real opponent, not against the Detroit Pistons who came in with injuries, but it looked like a team that realized they were in the playoffs, RJ, and Milwaukee looked like a bully that was built to win in the regular season. And I got to be honest, remember the book on Budenholzer, the coach, he coached Atlanta, and they were great during the regular season, and those teams disappeared in the playoffs.
Okay, so we're going to look at a couple of numbers. The opening game, what the spread was, Boston, Milwaukee. We'll look at game two and see what the zigzag says. Let's look, though, at the series price. Milwaukee entered minus 260. Fez was smiling like howdy doody. And now the Bucks minus 130. So from 260... It's about a toss-up now in the series. Fez, I know that you're going to want to be, oh, yeah, I'm still with Milwaukee. But if you had to make a separate bet now, Bucks minus 130 or Boston plus 110, where do you go? Once again, maybe you didn't want to answer that question. Well, let's do this. We'll get our news update, and in just a minute, we're going to give you the answer to that. That was a natural tease. We're going to see who Fez would play. Throw it to Dan.
Thanks, RJ. Rockets point guard Chris Paul involved in some breaking news as he was fined $35,000 for aggressively confronting and making contact with an official in game one of the Western Conference semis on Sunday against the Warriors. Paul, though, not suspended for his actions, so he'll be available for Tuesday's game two. Now, that action was included in the NBA's final two-minute report from yesterday's game one. Referees did make the correct decision by not calling a foul on Draymond Green against James Harden in the final seconds, but the refs did miss a few calls in the final 2 minutes, including two calls that should have gone against Warriors guard Steph Curry. Curry should have been called for a foul with a minute 10 to go that forced a James Harden turnover, and also should have been called a foul on Eric Gordon with 5 seconds remaining. So Steph Curry getting away with some calls, according to the NBA's two-minute report. Sixers and Raptors will tip it off 8 o'clock Eastern time tonight in their game two in Toronto. Raptors are up 1-0. Blazers and Nuggets play at 10:30 Eastern time in game one of the Western semifinals, while the Spurs and head coach Greg Popovich are in talks on a new contract. Texas Tech is giving men's basketball coach Chris Beard a 6-year extension worth more than $27 million. His annual salary will be the fourth highest among college basketball coaches, behind only John Calipari, Mike Krzyzewski, and Rick Barnes. Eagles exercise the 5th-year option on quarterback Carson Wentz's contract, while the newest Dolphin, Josh Rosen, was introduced today.
It felt like I got drafted twice. I mean, they actually called me from like their draft room, so I talked to like GM, head coach, coordinator, just as if I was like actually normally drafted.
Rosen, of course, drafted in the first round last year by the Cardinals, was dealt by Arizona to the Dolphins on Friday. Eagles, I've mentioned, exercising the option on Carson Wentz. Chiefs considering placing wide receiver Tyreek Hill on the commissioner's exempt list as soon as this week, according to ESPN. And Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich out of the lineup tonight. He's dealing with back discomfort as the Brewers host the Rockies. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Dan. Brad Powers for Straight Out of Vegas. Coming up at the bottom at the end of the show, best bets coming your way in the 3 major games tonight on television. We'll have it for you. And just in a little bit, we're going to be talking Game of Thrones odds. But we have to get this question answered, RJ, on the Laryngitis Show. RJ Bell's with me here. What is Fez's answer right now? Who would Fez rather have, the Bucks in this series or the Boston Celtics?
Fez?
Because they're favored still at minus 130, but I got to tell you, Brad, I prematurely was already celebrating, and I was shocked and dismayed at game one.
And I'll tell you this, I think it connects with what we talked about with Golden State. Golden State played playoff basketball later or earlier than they typically do, meaning that lineup of death that you can't play for extended minutes for an extended period of time because physically the small guys are going to get beat up. Kerr went to it early. Milwaukee, on the other hand, kept the big lumbering guys in. They're playing a regular season style of basketball. Maybe it's tough to blame them because they had such success during the regular season, Milwaukee. But I feel like this is coaching specifically. Milwaukee, their starters played about the same amount of minutes. They didn't go small. Boston did what they did. And Brad Stevens, we can question, did he get crowned as a great coach a little early, prematurely? I think so. I think we see Stevens is not yet great at managing gigantic egos for players making tens of millions of dollars a year, and more than he is. But you give him an X's and O's problem as good as anyone, and I don't know if Milwaukee has an answer to that. Though Fez, ever stubborn, says, well, I'll still take Milwaukee.
And let's see if he'll put his money where his mouth is. Fez, you said you'd take the Bucks minus 130. You and I already have a bet, basically, on this. You want it? Go ahead and lay the 130 with Milwaukee, and I'll take the plus 10 with Boston. We'll make it a bet right now. You want it?
Absolutely. The Bucks have had an injury with Brogdon, their starting guard. He's been out since the middle of March. That, you know what that sound means? $100, Brad Powers and I have Milwaukee to win the series. Brogdon has some plantar fasciitis. He looks like he's finally going to be back game three or four. That could well give Budenholzer more options.
So his pick is contingent on maybe this guy that half the audience has never heard of will be back in a week or two. Solid thinking there, Fez. RJ Bell straight out of Vegas. This is the Laryngitis Show.
But I'm a superstitious man.
Let's talk Game of Thrones, but I got to be honest with you. I don't like that we do this. It's only a minute, though.
Yes.
It's only a minute. During a week, we have 200 minutes of airtime. 199 is Game of Thrones free. Go, Brad.
All right, episode 3 went last night. Now, who sits on top of the Iron Throne? Your favorite, Jon Snow, plus 275, followed by, is it Gendry or Gendry?
I don't know, and I'm proud of it.
Plus 750. Next up, Gendry. Bran Stark, next up, 8-1. Ooh, moving up a little bit. Daenerys Targaryen, the dragon lady, I think. Plus 550.
You know what's funny? Somehow you know her name. It's the hardest name on there. How did you know every little syllable?
Because I actually like the actress.
I bet you do.
I do. I like her eyebrows.
Oh, my God. What's that code for?
Her eyebrows.
Oh, okay.
She's known for them. Tyrion Lannister, he's plus 850. Sansa Stark, plus 864. And Arya Stark, 16-1.
Okay.
Sitting on top of the Iron Throne.
So just read the top five favorites in order right now without the odds.
Jon Snow, Gendry, Bran Stark, Daenerys Targaryen, and Tyrion Lannister.
Okay. No more Game of Thrones.
No more Game of Thrones.
This time Monday. All right, last thing. RJ Bell straight out of Vegas with Brad Powers. Fez, switching away from Game of Thrones, I think Toronto and Sixers are the simplest series. You got a Toronto team that always played well in the regular season. They didn't understand the transition to the playoffs strategically, mentally, whatever. Probably some combination. After game one of the first round, looks like Toronto understands it. One of those elements is lean on your superstar. Let him lead the way. Also, if you look at the matchups, and I'm hearing these trends floating around today, I mean, the Raptors have just dominated the 76ers. My question is, how much of this is Toronto's just better, and how much of this is matchup advantage for Toronto?
I think Toronto is just better. You nailed it, RJ. Kawhi Leonard has made all the difference. And after that ridiculous game one in the first round that they lost, where they only played him a little over 30 minutes, they have let him take command here. And Toronto's a whole lot deeper also. And Philadelphia's problems tonight. Their number one guy off the bench, Mike Scott, is out. Remember, Philly has a terrible bench. And Embiid is fighting a stomach illness as well and has to play. Just played on Saturday and played 30 minutes. Advantage, Toronto.
Yeah, and keep in mind, one, Gasol might be limited in many spots for Toronto. But he was traded for as the Embiid stopper. And game one, it worked. Also, if you look at Toronto after that Gasol trade, bench weakness. Now listen, I'm not cutting on Van Vliet. But if you overall look at the bench of the Raptors, it's below average. But Philly has maybe the worst bench. Or let's just say Philly is way below average. So in a way, you got a stopper for Embiid, and Philadelphia is a team that can exploit with the second unit what a lot of teams could against the thin Toronto bench. Right now, after one game, Toronto's up to a minus 425 favorite to win the series. Big jump after one game. When we come back, we're going to talk about game two in that series and all the other TV games.
Straight out of Vegas on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Straight out of Vegas, I'm Brad Powers, filling in for Jonas Knox. It's officially the Laryngitis Show, RJ Bell in the house.
And I got to tell you, I think it's going pretty well.
It is.
Maybe I didn't know this is the cure for laryngitis is just keep talking and eventually you're going to be okay. Though I do like the Brando Godfather echo. I mean, it just feels like...
Use all your powers and all your skills.
Use all your powers and all your... Ooh, powers and all your skill. But we got picks. We do this the last segment of the show, every show, 6 o'clock Eastern hour, about 10 minutes before 7. A lot of the listeners, a lot of them, they're going to be watching sports tonight. We give the bettors... About half our audience bets the picks, but also if you don't bet, we're going to tell you things about that game that's going to help you watch smartly.
And we'll start it off, RJ, in Major League Baseball. First pitch in about 10 minutes here. Oakland's at Boston, where the Red Sox are a minus 130 favorite. Where do you go on this one, Fez?
I am leaning to Boston. Boston is undervalued because of how poorly their win-loss record is. They're 11-17. Well, it looks like they're not very good, right, to be 11-17. Well, their ace, Chris Sale, has been terrible this year, and Boston has lost all 6 games that Sale has pitched. So without him, Boston is 11-11, slightly underachieving, mind you, but not nearly so to the extent that their season win record appears to show at 11-17. At the beginning of the year, you told me I could get Boston at home in a good spot here because Oakland's coming in off 3 games at Toronto and only have to lay minus 130. You would say that is a complete and utter bargain on Boston. I'll lean Boston in this game.
But hold on a second, Fez. Even if the pitcher is replacement level, Boston is supposed to win some of those games. You can't just dismiss them all.
Well, Sale's been pitching. He's just been, he's got a 7.5 earned run average. The reason they've lost those 6 games is really solely because of him in those 6 games, RJ.
Now, I still believe even if a good team, even if you have a bad pitcher going that day, are going to win some of the games. But I agree with Fez overall. I do think at a minimum, it's a lean towards Boston. And here's one more reason. This came from pregame pro Dave Esler, big time, long time winner. Is if you look at Montas, he only threw 100 plus pitches last season one time, and he was crushed the next game. Montas last game, 107 pitches. I think you got a tired pitcher for Oakland. Historically, that's been a problem for him. They never let him get this tired because of they don't think he's up to it. So that's negative for Oakland, positive for Boston.
Moving along to the NBA, game 2 tonight, 76ers at the Raptors. Right now the Raptors, a 7.5-point favorite. Who do you got, Fez?
Yeah, I lean to Toronto, and it's all about that bad Philly bench being even weaker tonight without their guard Mike Scott, who is out, and it's not helping that Embiid, if he plays, he's got that stomach ailment. He might not be able to play nearly as many minutes as he did Saturday. So because of that, I'm leaning Toronto.
Okay, so one of our basic assumptions, Faz, is anything that's obvious isn't something you can bet with because everyone knows it. Do you feel like the marketplace hasn't adjusted for Embiid's illness?
I feel the marketplace has not adjusted for Mike Scott being out. He doesn't move the needle at all, RJ, but Philly's bench is so bad, they need this guy to play, and he's not playing.
So let's figure out how the market has adjusted. What was the line in game one? What's the line in game two?
So the line game two right now, I see Toronto is laying -7.5 to -8. In game one, Toronto was only laying -6.5 to -7.
So it shows you Embiid's health being accounted for with his line going up. We got about a minute left, Brett.
Yeah, game two in the NBA tonight. It's game one of the semifinals in the Western Conference. The Blazers are at the Nuggets. Right now, the Nuggets, a 4-point home favorite.
And I'm going to lean to Denver in this game. And the reason is a key matchup edge. Denver has a tremendous center. Jokic, the Joker, very, very difficult to stop. Well, guess what? I don't see how Portland is going to stop him because their starting center, Nurkic, is out for the year, and their backup center, Enes Kanter, has a dislocated shoulder. He's saying he's having trouble eating, sleeping, and putting on a shirt. That does not bode well for a good performance, especially against an all-star center like Jokic. I'm going to lean to Denver.
I disagree on this one. If you look at the Nuggets, they're favored in the series -145. They have home court. But boy, oh boy, it was a war. It was a seven-game war. It's almost like Denver was baptized by blood. But when you bleed, there's an effect. And I just don't think it's possible that Denver's going to feel 100% in this game. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll see how my voice sounds tomorrow.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com.